This week's mailbag comes to us from Tanya. Well, today was the day. I woke up to the hubster grumbling that he was going to do our taxes today. Oh, joy. He asked for the tax documents. I went to my two-month-old Sunday basket and pulled out the tax slash pocket, the location where I had put all incoming tax documentation for the past 2 months. Later, he bellowed for a specific tax form. I told him that it never made it to my desk or it would be in the Sunday basket, so I don't know where it would be. He grumbled and muttered and muttered and grumbled, attempting to find a stack of paper anywhere in the house. However, none were to be found except in his office, which houses only his things. 15 minutes later, he says, "Oh, here it is. It's on my desk. Sunday basket for the win. Maybe I'll have my husband trained by next year."
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Sarah, welcome back to the Organized 365 podcast.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you very much.
So Sarah is our lead researcher here at Organized 365. You met her quite a few episodes back when we talked about how she joined the team, how we got started in the research that we had in IRB, how we came up with the questions for the study that we did. And then in the last five episodes, you've heard the results, some of the results from the episodes. Sarah, we could publish survey results for, I think you said 18 months from the amount of information that we have.
Yeah, we could publish survey results for 18 different studies.
Oh my gosh, there's
amazing.
So much to unpack. But while I was creating these questions with you and we started the survey, you said when we do proper academic research, you do a literature review first. Now, I have to say, you were so excited to do the literature review with me for this study that you did it over the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day and the next week. You're like, "I didn't have that ready for you in 7 days." It was like incredible the amount of research you did. And then since that time, we've been refining it. And hopefully, fingers crossed, at the time of listening to this, it should be published in the Arkansas Journal of Psychology. If it isn't, then it will be soon. It's gone through a couple of reviews, cleaned it up a little bit. But how exciting is this that we have a published or soon to be published literature review?
It is super exciting. I'm very excited about it. And I finished it while I had COVID. That was amazing.
Yeah, I didn't know if you were going to mention that. You emailed me over the weekend. This is like January 1st. You're like, "I've been diagnosed with COVID, but I'm still going to get the literature review time." I was like, "Could you please take care of yourself?" And you're like, "No, I'm good. I'm good." I'm like, "Oh my gosh.
I can breathe. I'm good." No.
Oh, you are like... But you are as passionate about this research as I am. Like, before we get into this literature review, what we found before we did the study, what we know about now because we did the study and these literature reviews, like, this is all unpacking why the Organized 365 courses and products are working for people. Like, we know they work. Now we're finding out why they work. Yeah. Why are you so passionate in joining us in researching this?
My previous research was on self-determination theory, intrinsic, mm-hmm. extrinsic motivation, counterproductive workplace behavior, and self-esteem. Mind you, that was in the workplace behaviors. However, there's even when I was doing that research, there was a significant correlation between home and work behavior. And a very wise person told me that we must stand on the shoulders of giants to move forward. And I knew, using your products, that you had this excellent system and wonderful products. So I thought, why wouldn't it be very fascinating and interesting to stand on those shoulders and discover more and discover what has been done as far as gender qualities and basically motivation in the home? right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do it. I thought there was I had a passion for it, and there was a need for it as well. Not only your need, but needs for others to fully understand the significance behind your products and your services and why they are needed, because there are deficits in the home.
Yeah, I agree. It's not even Organized 365 or our products. It's the lack of data and research inside of the home.
Yes.
And you cannot articulate and discuss and come up with solutions if you don't have data, like if you aren't starting with a common language. That's why we have defined housework as actually four different kinds of work. It's not just cleaning or what you've seen on TV. It's actually cleaning, tasks of daily living, organization, and maintenance. And now that we're starting that language and we've defined it and we're running studies based on that, other people can run studies. So that's what I'm excited to talk about, is who before us have run studies that we have looked at, and now we are adding to their studies in order to paint a clearer picture so that our solutions and the other solutions that are out there and will come after us will be able to be more easily understood and discussed with a common language.
Yes.
All right. So our literature review is called The Role Women Play in the 21st Century, Home and Gender Equality, a literature review by Sarah M. Dyson and Lisa Woodruff. And we are publishing it in the Arkansas Journal of Psychology, hopefully the July issue. If not that, you can find it at organized365.com/research. As soon as it's up, we will have it there. I'm going to go ahead and read the abstract first, and I'm going to keep reading little pieces out of the literature review so you can hear a little bit of the research that we've done, and then Sarah and I are going to have discussions about it. So this is like how and why we did the study. So over the past 50 years, gender roles in the home may not have changed significantly, yet environmental and technological factors have drastically changed. Women are still considered the primary caregiver and homemaker. However, their responsibilities, roles, and tasks have increased across the board. Although the roles of women in the 21st century have not changed, the gender dynamics in modern homes have radically transformed. Research suggests that women working outside of the home have a negative emotional spillover into both work and home life. The negativity has combined to a time squeeze, leaving women little time to be productive at home. Negative emotions have also been found among women who engage in entrepreneurial ventures and multiple social responsibilities while maintaining in-home organization. This literature review is structured according to four main topics. One, the overlap of queuing, goal setting, goal attainment, and responsibilities of women in the 21st century home. Two, roles and expectations of the 21st century woman. Three, women of the 21st century and connections between homemakers and entrepreneurs. And four, proposal of a future research agenda based on some topics and classification of analysis. So, Sarah, when we first met and we were making the questions for the survey, my hypothesis was that women were doing more work at home than men were. And I thought we would do a study that would show that to be true, which is not actually what happened at all. But that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, in my age group and my socioeconomic life and my observation as a woman who's never lived anywhere other than Ohio in a suburb, always in a suburb, like my observation of all my friends and family is that the woman does the majority of the work at home. And our research did not find that to be true. I knew that it was different by generation, but I didn't know the degree it was different by generation, which is why I'm so glad we're doing this research, because already I have changed my thoughts about, home. And it even changed our mission statement. We used to be a company that helped busy women get their home and paper organized in one calendar year with functional systems at work. And we are now a company that helps the head of household get their home and paper organized. Like, we are not just targeting women or for women. Like, we are already expanding and realizing that there are so many generations, so many genders looking at us for home organization answers. But when we started, before we started the study, we were specifically looking at women. And I do feel that we have still found women are still more responsible and have the weight of home organization than men do at this time in society, but it's changing. And we want to be part of that discussion of that change that is naturally occurring and maybe give it a little bit of gas to speed up the pace a little bit.
Yes.
Was that what you thought too? Like,
yes, that is what I thought. Whenever we did get the research back, I was very surprised that I, like you, assumed certain things. And that was one of them, is that the primarily women were doing these roles in the household. And from the information that I got back from the literature review, it specifically defines the ways that gender roles have changed. Although there seems to be a deficit in certain areas. And I think it's filling those gaps in those areas where companies like yours and your systems will be able to fill those deficits.
Yeah, people are looking for it.
Yes. Like
the conversation is out there and now people are looking for solutions. So we need solutions that are for all genders, all age groups, all types of houses, like not just targeted to a specific type of house or a specific person inside of a specific kind of house.
Correct.
All right, we're going to go ahead and break the rest of this podcast into those four things that we identified in that abstract. The first one being cueing, goal setting, goal attainment, and responsibilities of women in the 21st century. Let me read a little bit out of the literature review we wrote, and then we'll have a discussion. Business managers and owners have used self-regulating strategies to ensure career progression. Researchers Serrato and Sifri and Rose, 2017, indicated that men had utilized self-regulation components to advance their careers and heighten their performance in sports competitions. Researchers have postulated that by incorporating goal setting, self-regulation, and self-cueing in the 21st century home, homemakers could have positive effects on home organization, tasks of daily living, and project completion. And that's Bendel et al., 2019. So in that, I just want to say that whenever we say tasks of daily living in this literature review, that is a word that we have defined. So that word, tasks of daily living, wasn't in the research that you did. We're using that word based on our definition. But those are a couple of different research studies which pulled out the need for cueing, goal setting, and goal attainment at home, and they were comparing it to men and their success doing that inside of business, which I find fascinating. So first of all, before we go into that, Sarah, what is cueing?
Cueing consists of creating a list of notes or reminders, focusing your attention and redirecting patterns of behavior. So it's more of a component of self-regulating behaviors. Self-cueing is also an external cue, which serves as a compelling reminder to keep one's attention and focused on desirable activities, which will then lead to goal attainment.
Okay, in real person speak, Sarah, how does that work? Like you say that organized 365 systems naturally do this cueing and goal attainment. What is it that we're doing in the Sunday Basket or the 100-day program that is cueing us?
So the Sunday Basket is a piece of that cueing process. So it's a physical product and reminder to keep us on track, to keep us going back to that basket, putting things in it. So that's a physical reminder. You promote using 3x5 index cards, write down your thoughts, ideas. That is a physical cueing reminder to not only remind us to write it down, but we take out our basket, we take those cards out of the basket, and then we're reminded about those concepts, objects again. So if we wrote down a goal or a process to get us to that end goal, that's a self-cueing component that allows us to progress forward.
Yeah, which is, it's so cool. Like that, just such a simple act of putting it on an index card instead of putting your ideas on a to-do list. It's a different cueing mechanism.
It is. It is. And it interacts with our brain differently. And I would like to know more about that later.
Yes, I was already thinking that's like our future research, because now a nurse practitioner has identified the reason that that works is because we have eliminated working memory, the need for working memory. And I'm like, that's it. So yes. When we get to number four, Sarah and I are most excited about future research.
Yeah.
And we definitely are going to be exploring not only that cueing, but, you know, how is that helping our working memory and how we move things around. So, okay, that's cueing. Goal attainment. For me, the Organize 365 products help with goal attainment because you remember what the goal was. Like for so long, I'd be like, I have an hour. How can I spend this hour? And I would never get an hour. And then I'd spend so much of the hour wondering what I could do or trying to do too many things in that hour because I'm never going to get another hour again. And now I just don't, I don't put that much pressure on myself. Like when an hour comes up, I just look at the Sunday basket. I'm like, oh, I could read a book. I could do a puzzle. I could work on my scrapbooks. I could, you know, work on getting Joey ready for his apartment. Like I have all my projects ready to go. I could just pick one out and do it, or I could take a nap. Like it doesn't matter, but I have all my possibilities there. And I just go there and pick out the next goal I want to achieve when the time arises.
Yes. But one challenge that the research showed with goal attainment was within the home, it's usually primarily formulated by the women in the home and not necessarily the men. However, to be successful with goal attainment, everyone within the home should understand those collective goals. So I find that to be interesting with your children and your spouse and how all of those need to work together to achieve goal attainment.
Since Abby is living with us and she's pregnant and about to have a baby, about halfway through her pregnancy, my Sunday basket became mostly about Grayson and her and all these things. I was like, you know what? This is ridiculous. Like you're going to have a baby. You need a Sunday basket. So we set up a Sunday basket for her. And now on Sunday, I go through mine. She goes through hers. Let's be clear. Greg has a Sunday basket. He's had a Sunday basket for 15 years. It is a very small basket. It is not the Organize 365 basket. He actually goes through everything in that basket about twice a year, and he gets a medal when he does. He does not go through his on a regular basis. It's more like, this is yours. I'm putting it in your holding space. But now on this kitchen counter, we have Greg's Sunday basket, Abby's Sunday basket, my Sunday basket. Abby and I drop our purses there at the end of the day. And I was looking at it the other day, and I thought, this is so cool that as I get the mail now, like I can just drop it in whoever's basket. And I am not responsible for these other adults in my house. And Abby is already learning the skills. Like she came up to me on Sunday and she says, time to go through our Sunday baskets. And the next Sunday she said, there's nothing in my Sunday basket. So I don't have to do my Sunday basket. I said, oh, no. Just because there's no new mail doesn't mean we don't do the Sunday basket. We have to check all the slash pockets. But she's very readily adapting to this system. And it is a way to move these tasks of daily living and these responsibilities that are of the person to the person, especially as they become adults. Like I have two adult children. There should be a place to drop their mail that is not in mom's Sunday basket anymore. And it's a real natural way to move that over.
Yes. Yes. It's absolutely an amazing process and what it leads to, the end result, which the end result is kind of never ending. It's right. However, it's... Well, I mean, in reality, it's just a continuous process to lead you to different goals, right?
Because we don't want to be done with our goals. Like we were looking at Abby's stroller and she didn't know what to do. And she said, well, the instructions for that were in the garage, but you put it in my Sunday basket because we haven't put it in the binder yet. So we can go find those in the Sunday basket. I mean, what 19-year-old can tell you where the instruction manual for the thing they bought a month ago is? You know, it's just, she already knew that it went from the garage to the Sunday basket and it's in the to be filed slash pocket. And she knows it goes in her binder, but she knows we haven't put it in her binder yet. I mean, that's so great.
Awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah,
it is.
So there was something that you quoted in here from Bendel et al. 2019 that really struck me. It was Bendel et al. 2019 and Williams et al. 2018 noted that goal setting was not always problematic. Problems originated over the past 30 years as responsibilities increased and priorities shifted from home to work. Yeah. My mind was blown when, you know, you uncovered that stat and we put it in the literature review. We have this thought in our head that we're evolving. We have technology. We have digitization. You can order and pick up your groceries. You don't have to go through the grocery store. Like we don't have as much to do at home. Like the perception in the media and is that the amount to do at home is less. But what you found in the research substantiated what I feel as a homeowner, that I cannot get ahead. in this amount of work. Like, it's just like never ending. And I cannot believe you're telling me that we're doing more today than we were before. That's amazing.
Yes. I thought it was amazing as well. But the role of women has drastically changed over the past 40 years. You know, 40 years ago, women were, okay, so it was the 1980s, and women were just now able to get a credit card in their own name without their spouse being on it. So that was kind of a new concept that was coming into being, you know, and then women buying homes by themselves without a spouse or without a male. So that was a new concept. And women had to go to work in a lot of cases. So you had a lot of, from the 40s, you had single moms, and then going forward to the 80s, you had a lot of single parents per se. So they had to go to work. And then the mothers still had, you know, kids and things to do at home. And the workload kind of doubled over the past 40 years. Not, you know, despite the technology, you still had everything to do, you, including a spouse now, most likely. You had your kid, your spouse. And there was a lack of communication, in a sense, to, and then it dropped the goal attainment process. So the only one striving to do that was the woman in the household in most cases. And in a lot of literature that I reviewed, the current literature, that is still the state of things in a lot of American homes, is that there is a lack of communication. There's a lack of structure between, within the home family element that is in a lot of cases non-existent. So that research was within the past 4 years. So it is still prevalent today that there is no structure. There's no communication line to open those strings up. So therefore increasing the work, right? So you have this one person out there doing all of the work, most of it, let's say 80% of it. And there's a lack of communication within the family element.
As you are saying those statistics about credit cards and buying houses, like, that has not been my experience as a 49-year-old college educated woman. And I forget how recently it was that women did not have the same buying power, availability of credit as men did, as we learned during the pandemic. And, you know, racial inequality was brought more to light and more people were able to empathize and understand different races and ethnicities that were different than their own and their experience. Like, it amazes me for a Gen X woman like me, a millennial, we did not experience the 60s and 70s. Like, our parents did, but they didn't really articulate. Like, we forget. Like, we don't realize how short of an amount of time that really anyone other than a white man wasn't able to do something in our country. Like, it boggles our mind today, as diverse and integrated as we are of a society and in our personal lives, that our social structures are not as evolved as we as individuals are. It takes a long time for governments to change, for institutions to change, for what happens inside the home. You do inside of your home what your parents did. And what you saw being raised, like, you learn more by watching than by being told. And so you just don't even think about the things you do. Like, I remember there was a cartoon or whatever, and it was someone got a roast and they took the roast out and they cut a quarter of it off and they threw it in the trash and then they put it in the oven. And the grandmother or whatever said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Well, you know, I watched mom do it. I watched you do it. You cut off a quarter and you put it in the trash and you put the rest in the oven." She goes, "Our pan was too small. Like, you have a big enough, why are you throwing away good meat?" And she thought part of the cooking was just to cut it off and put it on. Because you just do whatever you see. The pan was too small. Like, we don't know why past generations did what they did, which is, you know, understanding my house as a business, thinking about my role in my house as a CEO, or when I was a teacher, I would think about my house as far as a teacher and planning lesson plans for my kids. And now that I'm an entrepreneur, I think about, well, if I set this structure up at work, I get my office cleaned, then I could get my house cleaned. If there is, you know, like, that there are these different structures that you set up at work, well, let's set those up at home. Let's divide this work so it is more equitable. It's just, that framework of not thinking of it as just housework, like just housework that you're going to get done in a few minutes, which leads to number two, the roles and responsibilities and expectations of the 21st century woman. We think that, like I thought that, well, if I just got the to-do list written out and I had a couple hours, I can get all my quote unquote housework done, which is the cooking, the tasks of daily living and everything. And I never get the to-do list done. And then I'm more frustrated after I spent 6 hours because, you know, a lot of my weekend is gone and I feel like I'm never going to get done. So what we found was researchers Southerton, 2003, and Serrato and Sifri, 2018, agreed that tasks of daily living and the roles and responsibilities in the home are time consuming and require on average 20 hours a week to complete. And that matches what I found in the Pew Research Institute, what we did when Greg and I did a time study. And we are not counting childcare. This is not with kids. Oh. Every single human is spending a lot more time working in their house than they want to admit, or they're just not doing it and they can't figure out why they're not doing it. And it's because it's so much time.
It is a lot of time. I mean, it's a part-time job is what it is. And then there's additional research in Safri's article, and he goes into detail about childcare and how much that actually takes up. So the childcare portion of it is another 15 hours a week. So you're looking at almost another full-time job here. It's 35 hours. And your reimbursement is a wonderful child. Yes. And a wonderful home. So that's what you should get. And that is amazing. However, for one person to handle that and work a full-time job and right. try to take care of yourself, it's hard. It is very difficult. So that one was kind of hard to swallow in a sense.
Yeah. I find it interesting that the kids take 15 hours and the housework takes 20.
Right. And it differs between ages, right? So you have the older the right. child, the less the time, the younger the child, the more the time. So yes.
Which is probably why in Leave It to Beaver, you know, the mom's always doing the work and the kids are outside playing because they need them outside playing so they can get all the work done.
Exactly. It yeah. is, yes.
One of the things, you know, I love studying Laura Vanderkam because she looks at time differently. And her looking at time differently has caused me to look at time differently. And I would say over the last couple of years, I've become quasi-obsessed with time. Understanding, you know, when is our optimal time based on that book, The Power of When, what tasks can be combined and use the same energy so that you could be more productive, so you can get things down to less time. I mean, so we're saying that your housework takes 20 hours a week. You know, I always say hiring a housekeeper is going to eliminate like 6 of those, at least sometimes 8. I don't know the math. I just know that it works. I know that's not everybody's reality or possibility, but it is a way to get rid of a lot of the hours. But there are hours that just are not going to go away. So in our 100-day home organization program, I've had a planner for, I think, four and a half years. And in the beginning of that planner, even before we started planning day, I listed out all of the roles and responsibilities in your house because Greg and I did a time study and it was 36 hours that we collectively were spending on childcare and housework when our kids were middle school age. I was doing about 22 of those hours and Greg was doing 14. Now, I say that because yes, I was doing more hours, but we both felt like we were doing too many hours. And so we would often look at the other person and be like, I am doing so much. And I think that a lot of the conversation between spouses or people who cohabitate together is like, I am doing so much because you are. You're both doing part-time jobs. So you figure mm-hmm. if I am doing this much, then surely the other person is not doing enough. And the reality is you're both doing that much. Like you may be doing a percentage more, but if they stop doing their portion, you wouldn't even get close to getting it all done. So I made a list of all of the things that Greg and I were doing, and I made it as our roles and responsibilities list. And I had it divided in like 12 different categories. And one of the things I did as soon as we started planning day was I had you go through the planner and check off every single thing that you were responsible for. And then I said, are you overwhelmed? And everyone was like, yes. I was like, good, you should be. because you need to understand how much you're trying to do. So you realize you're not going to get it all done. And I set out to have them change their expectations, decide what they were going to focus on and do to excellence, what they were going to do to a satisfactory level and let that be good enough, and what roles and responsibilities for the next 120 days they were literally not going to do based on planned neglect. Like, we're not going to do dishes, so we are going to buy paper plates. Or I am not going to dust for the next, 3 months because of whatever. Like, and I taught at that time, primarily women, to understand you're never going to get it all done. So what are the 2 to 3 things that you want to focus on in the next 120 days to excellence? What do you have to do to maintain your life? And what are the things that you're going to just talk to the family about and be like, look, we aren't even doing these things right now. And so we're just not going to worry about them. Now, recently, about a year ago, I switched the 100-day planner. And now we look at time so differently. And we actually look at our weekday time. We look at our Saturday time and we look at our Sunday time. Because you use your time on different days in different ways. And so if you're a shift worker or if you work a part-time job or whatever, then you may have like a main day that's your top Monday through Friday. And then you may have a working day and an off day. There are only 3 different ways that you divide your time at any season of life. I define those and we do those in planning day. And I still have everyone look at their roles and responsibilities first so they understand that there's more required of them than they are capable of doing because that is just life. But the difference is, I looked at that list a year ago and I realized more than half of those roles and responsibilities, I can now categorize over in the Sunday basket and they're done on 90 minutes on Sunday. And it leaves only a few handful of things that need to be done during the week. So now I divide them, all of the tasks into 5 categories. It's either a Sunday basket and errand activity, laundry, meals, household cleaning, or organizing. Which is exactly what we just came up with, which is tasks of daily living, cleaning, and organizing. Like, and I did that before we did this research. And so I say all this because verbally processing it on the podcast, as you guys know I do, continually upgrading and reiterating the Organize 365 products and services as I get new learnings and understandings and watch more people go through the program and what they have success with, helps to refine this. And I was able to go from overwhelmed with 36 hours worth of work Greg and I were doing with no plan to now understanding I have a weekday time, I have a Saturday time, I have a Sunday time allotment. I'm going to choose proactively every 120 days how I want to spend that time. I'm going to proactively look at the tasks of daily living, cleaning, and organizing for the next 120 days. What am I going to do to excellence? What am I going to maintain? And what am I not going to worry about in this next path of time? That's how I'm trying to help people with this specific thing that we uncovered in the research. And then we had the study. And I think that's also why we have men and women in our study saying that they're doing most of the housework because everyone feels they're doing most of it.
Yes, yes, I agree. I very much. And I think that your solution to this gap is very sufficient.
And well, it's the next step. Like we will continue to iterate and there will be other people that come alongside and after me that will take it even further. But this is how far we've gotten it. We've defined that there's too much work to be done.
Yes.
We have to pick some of it and then we have to bucket it like we do at work. The ending of this section, we quoted Huffman et al. 2017 identified the importance of understanding gender ideology due to the misconceptions of the family system's impact. Huffman et al. 2017 postulated individual family members as a family system rather than individuals. Researchers find that understanding the family as a system rather than a domain further establishes the importance of responsibility, resources, management of daily stress, and productivity. And then later we quote, Huffman et al. 2017 noted that couples who strive for a more cohesive family tend to initiate strategies to increase fairness. In other words, couples who spent extra time communicating and planning home-oriented tasks obtained successful results and improved organization within their home. We have to talk about this. No one, we're not going to divide it evenly, and we're not going to eliminate our work by giving our tasks to our partners or other people in our house, we have to have communications. All right, we're all doing too much. What could we let go of in this season so that we can have more time together as a family? And communication always makes everything better.
Right.
Even if you still do the same amount of work, at least you feel like you're on the same page. So one of my roles is to do the dishes. And the last two nights I worked late. So I worked a 15-hour day yesterday and I came home and Greg had made dinner for the kids the night before because he buys the food and he cooks and all that. And then I usually do the dishes. Even if I don't eat the meal, I do the dishes. So I came home last night after, you know, on regular time, and he had done all the dishes from last night and we were cleaning out the refrigerator and he continued to do the dishes. And he said, "I'm doing the dishes and that's your responsibility." I said, "I know. Thank you so much. I was going to do it." He goes, "No, you're working very hard right now. Like, I'm happy to do this for us." And I said, "Well, you're working hard too." Like, he's working on the weekends and he doesn't normally do that. And he says, "We're a team." Like, he would just keep coming back to, "We're a team. This is what we're doing at this time." And when you frame it that way, like, and you're appreciative of someone else doing your chore, it's the communication. And then there's no bitterness and I had to, and keeping track, which I've done in the past, and it does not bode well.
No, it's not a competition. It is a team. I think, as you know, cohabitating with someone, you are on the same team. If you're not, mm-hmm. your household will be in conflict and turmoil for quite some time. But for the households that spend the extra time communicating and organizing the task, they were successful with goal attainment. They all had the same goal in mind, the end goal, whether it was organizing the house, starting a new business, they reached their goals. So in Huffman's research, which was relatively recent, 2017, he discovered that families who actually took time to communicate, and it wasn't that long, it wasn't that much time. So you're talking 20 minutes a week to mm-hmm. discuss this. That's not very long for everyone to stay on the same page and strive to reach the same end result. So I found that to be very, very interesting.
And, you know, I remember early on in our marriage, Greg and I sharing expectations, and I've shared this story before, but this is the perfect time to have it. Like, growing up, my father wanted the house vacuumed every single day before he got home from work. And he got home at 5:30. So at 5 o'clock, either Emily and I vacuumed the house every day, every carpet, the entire house. I had great arm muscles. So when we got married and didn't even have kids and I was working, I would vacuum the house every single night. And then we had babies and I'm trying to vacuum the house every night before Greg gets home. And we had a cat. So I had to do it right before he got home so you wouldn't even see the little cat paw prints. So Joey's a baby. I'm exhausted. I have this dinner on the table. Greg comes home. I lose my mind. It was not pretty. And I'm like, "And I vacuum this house every single day for you." And he looks at me and goes, "You vacuum?" I was like, you don't know that I vacuum this house every single day for the last 5 years? He's like, "Why do you do that?" And I was like, "What do you mean? Why do I do that?" That's what you do. You vacuum before your spouse gets home from work. He goes, I mean, it's nice, but I don't care if you, like, I don't want us to live in dirt, but I, like, don't vacuum every day. And from that point forward, I vacuumed, you know, we had babies, so twice a week, but now every other week is good enough for me. If I had not, you know, had a meltdown, I would still be vacuuming my house every day, thinking that's an expectation that my current partner has that was my father's expectation from growing up. Like, we have a conversation. Get out the crackers and the cheese and the iced tea or the wine or whatever and say, "Hey, here are all the things I do. Do you care? Because dusting only has to happen every 7 weeks, according to Lisa's research. I'd like to do that once a month or every other month. Are you okay with that?" I'm sure they're going to be like, "You dust."
Really? Yeah, our habits, our vicarious learning process, what we pick up when we're young, I mean, just like you with the vacuum, it's okay to let those things go. We as humans think we have to keep up those traditions, roles, and responsibilities, but you're an adult. You really can make your own decisions and do what you want to do. You, I mean, be healthy, right? But do what makes you happy. it's you're not obligated to vacuum the house every single day, let alone cook dinner every day. You don't have to do anything.
Yes. Set the expectations. Mm-hmm. Think about what you're doing. Step one in organizing is decluttering. Like, don't just look at everything that's on your to-do list and figure out the most productive and efficient way to get it done. If you don't need to be doing it at all, then it doesn't matter how efficiently and productively you get it done. Stop doing it. Eliminate half. And then you may find that you eliminated too much and it's not up to your standards and you'd rather it look a certain way, then add 10 or 20% back in. But a lot of what you're doing, if you really do a time study and write down every single thing you're doing, you can eliminate at least 25%, maybe 50%, and especially the frequency at which you do it. And in stressful seasons of life, know that this is my optimal. If I can do everything, this is the housework I want to get done. When we have people who are sick or we're traveling or whatever the deal is, then we go down to the essential list and then bop back and forth between those two lists. Don't keep a checklist for yourself as if, you know, you're employing yourself to do this job.
Yes, that's very hard.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to move on to point three. And point three was about female homemakers to entrepreneurs, which of course I was extremely interested in. I'll start at the beginning of this portion of our literature review says, there has been substantial growth in female entrepreneurs over the past 10 years. For some female employees, work demands can spill over, which affects family life negatively. These included lack of time to meet family obligations and increasing tension and stress at home. Zhang, Zippe, and Park, 2012. Findings suggest that by establishing a predetermined path, women entrepreneurs were less likely to have a successful outcome, whereas individuals who adopted a flexible schedule to endure stresses from home and work had a prolific and productive result. I have a lot of experience in this one, Sarah.
Yes.
Personally, for me, I was not able to meet the demands of mothering and working outside of the home to my own expectations. You know, Greg has never said, you need to work or you don't need to work. Like, he's never. It was my own expectations of mothering that weren't met when I was outside of the home working. But the need for me to provide an income. Again, Greg has never said I need to provide an income, but we do. I just have always needed to provide an income in order for us to live the way I wanted to live and provide the education and resources for our kids that were important to me. So I have always had an income. And we see this in the pandemic. I mean, the statistics are staggering for the amount of women who have opted out of the workplace. You know, the studies have not been done yet. We don't know why that is happening. We could guess, but that's not the research that we're working on. But immediately, when you have any kind of a unexpected life event, it often falls to the woman to become the person that ends up at home. Now, in the pandemic case, I'm sure a lot of it is because of children, but also a lot of it is for caregiving. Yeah. And not wanting to be able, you know, even if they're vaccinated, not being exposed because they've compromised family members that they are caregivers of. And so there are lots of nuances as to why women tend to opt out of the workforce that is outside of our purview right now. But I want to identify two things that I've just personally observed. One is that women definitely work from home more. And in this research, we're talking about entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs can be defined in a couple of different ways. Most of my friends who are females and they are at home are what I would call solopreneurs or freelancers. They have a skill and they provide that to individuals or companies, but they don't have employees or contractors working for them. They are the sole worker in their business, which is a definition of entrepreneur. The kind of entrepreneur I am, and I come from a long line of this kind of entrepreneur, is a employer. Like, I have always wanted to be an employer. I derive a lot of joy out of providing jobs for people, developing my team with their unique giftings, and recirculating wealth into our community and other people's homes. One of the things we do at Organize 365, which is really fun, is whenever we need seasonal work done, we just look at our own families and our kids anywhere from, you know, 15 to early 20s. And we offer those seasonal jobs to the families first before we go outside of our families, because I would rather recirculate more organized 365 income into my employees' families and concentrate that so that they have even a better quality of life.
Yes.
So those are two different kinds of entrepreneurs. Like an entrepreneur like me, eventually I had to leave the home in order to establish an office because we fulfill physical products. But for the first 7 years of my entrepreneurial organized 365 business, everyone worked from home. And so, yes, you could do laundry. Like you could be there for a drop off and pickup and still get your work done. And I would say 50% of the organized 365 staff still work a very flexible, not a traditional 9-to-5 job, because we offer that flexibility for women to work part-time in the office and part-time at home, to work varying hours, based on the seasonality and whatever their needs are. And that's super important for women, especially need that flexibility.
Yes, definitely they do.
The last point that we're going to make in this section, which kind of broke my heart, Rose from 2017 expressed concern regarding working mothers who implemented tools such as time squeezing. I'd never heard this term before. A mother who worked more intensively during certain times and spent time with her children, thereby removing leisure, productive activities, and self-care from their schedules. Yeah. This is, I think, the evidence that we see that women are getting burned out. We have just identified in the first part of this podcast the cause of this. But when we see this, we're like, how do we fix this? This is women who are winning at work. They're winning with their kids and their house looks pretty good, but they are so depleted at the end of the day, they don't have time for a bubble bath. Exactly. Like they literally don't know when to go to the bathroom. They haven't had a good full night's sleep and they don't even know how long. And I feel like that is where you see specifically women are struggling, and we're not finding this specific research for men. So when you look at Greg and I, he was spending 14 hours a week in housework. I was spending 22 hours a week in housework. If we were both working full-time jobs, that means he had 8 hours of free time and I did not have that 8 hours of free time. I was lucky if I got a bubble bath. He was reading the paper, watching TV, you know, watching the sports. I wasn't doing those things. And this became really relevant to me when we created the very first physical Sunday basket. Like clearly I've been using a Sunday basket for 20 years, right? But when we manufactured the slash pockets and we had pink, purple, blue, green, because I knew that's what I needed for my workbox eventually. And I had the definition of pink is for you and purple is for the house and blue is for family and green is for your finances. And I put together my first very official Sunday basket. And I realized I had no pink. I didn't even know how to label the pockets. Like I didn't know what I would put on those pockets. Like I didn't remember what my hobbies were, what my passions were. Like I was so busy working, taking care of the house and the kids. There was no pink slash pockets for me.
So you had to go, how did you reconcile that?
Well, first I just labeled them and there was nothing in them. And that was probably a year. And I had identified it. And I would say it in the Sunday baskets. I'm like, we have got to figure out what our pink is. Yeah. And even today, I only usually have like one or two pink slash buckets that I'm really actively working on, because I am so passionate about growing Organized 365. I want to take Joey with me on the book tour. I want to be a great grandma and parent for Abby as she starts in her parenting journey. And I know the time to do those things is right now. So I'm okay to not have as many pink slash pockets for myself, but I do spend a full hour getting ready now. And I used to do that in 15 minutes. So the makeup and the hair and the fun clothes, like, and a hot bath every night, I do make time for that. But other than that, I pretty much don't. Do you, Sarah?
No.
We're not good at this, ladies.
No.
We just really are not.
No, I do have some pink ones. But they're things that I used to do. And
right.
Yeah. So whenever I started my doctoral program and was working on my dissertation, my pink ones went to the wayside because they were at one point they became more important than my dissertation because anything was more important. So it was a big distraction, right? But my, once I had the mindset of, I just need to get this finished, they really had to go to the wayside. And mm-hmm. I've looked at them and I've started to create one. It's an old one. It's the winemaking one. So I do like Ooh. To make wine as a hobby. So I've started a new winemaking process. So it's slow to get it back, but I think, mm-hmm. you know, one or two will do me.
You know, I have no research or anything to back this up, but I wonder if that is why sometimes women are more choosy about if and when and who they work with, because yeah. their work is kind of their, I mean, that is going to fill part of your pink slash pocket. So I love my job. So I don't mind if Organize 365 takes up more of my time because it is my passion. It is part of who I uniquely am. And I've created a company where everyone feels like they're really fulfilled from their job. So I wonder, you know, that leads us into future research. And that's something that we could potentially future research about. Wasn't on our list before 5 seconds ago, though.
Right. So what I was reading here, so Sear, 2016, mentioned that the subsequent response to overload, lack of energy, fatigue, exhaustion, decrease of household involvement has a significant adverse effect on women. So yeah, it's interesting. So the work that you're doing, you have a great passion for it, you love what you do. Does that reduce your fatigue and exhaustion at the end of the day versus someone who does something they don't really like to do? Does that increase their fatigue?
Right.
Doing similar work, but you both, you know, you like yours and they don't like theirs, and you're working the same number of hours. So that would be quite interesting to discover your attitude towards your work, positive or negative.
Yeah. We have such mm-hmm. a list, Sarah, of things that we want to tackle into. Some of those that we identified in the literature review before we even had the statistics back was that we really wanted to look at the cognitive aspects. So we say there are several factors to consider in furthering practical implications for female homemakers and female entrepreneurs. Bendel et al., Williams et al., and Zellwiger et al., that was 2019, 2018, and 2011, encourage future researchers, that's us, to explore cognitive aspects that develop incremental goal setting, self-cueing, and goal attainment. Further evaluation of these concepts offers effective strategies in different circumstances, such as accomplishing the tasks of daily living, home organization among 21st century women, female entrepreneurs experiencing spillover from work environments, and radical product innovations. And that's where we are now going to continue to use the research that we already have and start to create additional surveys that will specifically look at, you know, I love studying the brain and how we think and how our executive functioning works. And this has been a passion of mine for 7 years. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. I know as a teacher and an employer that we put things in place at school and at work that support people who need help with executive function, aka everyone, especially those who are diagnosed with ADHD.
Yes.
And we do not have any of those systems in the home. And it has been my observation and breaks my heart for some of my friends who end up taking a stint at home for a family member or to be a at-home caregiver. And then when that obligation is gone, they struggle getting their home organized enough and back into the structure that they had before they were at home so that they can re-enter the workforce or re-enter, you know, whatever it is that is outside of the home. And they end up at home trying to get the checklist done so that they can have permission to go out and re-enter society outside of the home. And because of the struggle with their executive function, they never get to the level where they feel that they can do that.
That is true. It's very difficult. It's if they lack a support system, it's even harder. So mm-hmm. it is a challenge to overcome. And if you lack motivation, it's even more challenging. So there's a lot of concepts and components that all interwork into the executive functioning process to be yep. successful in entering the workforce again. that is very difficult.
No, it breaks my heart because I see many of these women in my own experience, the people that are supposed to be their support, either in their parents or their spouse or their friends, actually make it worse by saying, you have all of this time, you've had enough time, why can't you get your act together? You should know how to do this. My mom knew how to do this. So-and-so knew how to do this. Why can't you figure it out? You should just know how to do it on your own. And it was early on in my organized 365 career. It could have been the very first year that I was organizing. And I was organizing a woman who had two highly special needs children. And I came over, we organized her kitchen, we organized her garage, and then we organized her closet. And she got very overwhelmed as we were organizing her closet. And I sent her out to get hangers. I didn't even need hangers. I was like, we need hangers. I knew we were going to have too many. I was like, just go get me, like, I need 24. So she left. I said, and get yourself some lunch and get a coffee and then come back. And I was like, I've got to get this closet done before she gets back. Like, she is at her max and I don't want to leave this undone. And she walked in. Of course, we didn't need the hangers. She might have even forgotten to get the hangers. She walked into the closet that was perfect. And she just started crying. And I was like, oh no, like, did she not want it this way? Did I do something wrong? And she said, I can go back to work. And I looked at her like, what are you talking about? And she said, I couldn't figure out how I would get dressed to go to work, but now I can go back to work. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, my mind was blown. Like, cleaning and organizing closet, which I love to do, which took me a day, gave her the framework that now she could go back to work. And that is the difference between just trying to get the to-do list done and it never gets done and feeling like you have the enough organization to go outside of the home and also take on that additional responsibility in addition to the housework and all of the other things that are related to inside of the home. And who's articulating that in that way so that other generations and other genders can understand the problem so that we can collectively come to a solution? And that's what we're doing. I mean, we're investing a lot of time and money in just being able to have broader conversations about this.
Yes. Yeah. So, the research should evaluate the possibility of scheduling flexibility to reduce the stress and workplace and home place and the family stress within. And it's research should, I think we need to come up with a way to get to that, the discovery of the actual problem, right? Mm-hmm. So your example, the person struggling with that, starting a job or going back into the workforce, identifying that single problem. In this example, the closet. There is no process to identify that problem either, and mm-hmm. on a simple way, right? So we may all struggle with some sort of problem, but I think that research should uncover that process. I think that would be quite interesting as well.
I just had this great idea that I probably shouldn't say out loud on the podcast. You know, when you own the company, no one can stop you. It's so fun. So as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, it's almost like we need a good housekeeping seal of approval. You remember that? Like from the 80s, where you wouldn't buy anything for your house unless it had the good housekeeping seal of approval, which meant that they had looked at all the possibilities out there. And they said, okay, of all of these possibilities out here, here are the ones that do what they actually say they're going to do and will actually solve your problem. So you would, as a homeowner, you would literally go and look for which products have the good housekeeping seal of approval. What if, like 10 years from now, Sarah, we have a whole organized 365 researching like unit, and we say, okay, you're struggling with this space and this diagnosis and this size family and this whatever, like the solution that most likely would work for you is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That would be interesting. So
what would that be?
That like, would be fun.
Because that's kind of what I'm trying to do as a teacher is look at my classroom, like who's listening on the podcast or interacting with me on Instagram. And I'm literally taking questions and comments that they're making and then recording podcasts to answer that problem or that conundrum that they have or that observation that they're seeing out in the world and relating it to home organization. So number one, everybody needs a Sunday basket. Like it just... everyone, even if it's like Greg's, that he has his little special place and he doesn't go through his every Sunday, he gets dispensation because nothing that has to be looked at every Sunday goes in his basket. But just understanding that, like, okay, we're going to start with the Sunday basket. Now, my issue is, what is it? And then what is the thing that is the best solution for that? Like, if you are a dual income family and you have kids that are young and need to go to daycare and school, then your first step might be to go read the book Fair Play by Eve Rodsky and get those 100 cards and fairly divide out your tasks. It's right. Not an organized 365 product that's always going to actually solve the problem, but based on your phase of life, your family dynamics, where you live in the world, like, this could be really, really cool. What we think now is, if I read the magic book of tidying up, my house should be tidy. What's the matter with me? That book is right. It sold 11 million copies. I'm deficient because my house is not organized yet.
Oh man. You need to work in a warehouse.
And that book is great. Like, it is exceptional for organizing your closet. If your closet is a problem, go get Marie's book, read it. You will get insights. You will have great things. Please, I beg of you, do not follow her paper organizing advice, which is to throw it all away. Japan is a digital country. We are not in America. Don't get rid of your paper. Please don't get rid of your paper that way. You would read the paper solution for paper. So there are all these different solutions that work. There is not one solution that applies to all. Ooh, Sarah, do you think we could create that in the next 10 years?
Yeah, I do. But we need more than a warehouse, Lisa.
More than a warehouse? What do you mean?
Well, I see it taking place in more than a warehouse. I think you need a building.
Oh, well, you know, total rabbit trail. You guys are at the end of the podcast, so you already know me. Longaberger is in the middle of Ohio.
What is that?
And they, Longaberger Baskets, they made a building that is in the shape of a basket.
Oh, cool. You need that.
I know. The problem is the building is in the middle of literally nowhere. Yeah. It's far away from where I am, but yes, don't think when it's been up for sale a couple of times because they went bankrupt at one point. Yeah, I can feel that, Sarah.
That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm, right. Anyway, I don't have lack of dreams or ambitions, or I'm not going anywhere is basically what I'm saying. And I think Sarah's in it with me for a while. We are already working on additional academic papers. At the time of this reporting, we will have already presented a poster. What else? We're looking at clinical studies using our products. If you have ideas, or you are a researcher, or you've already done research in this area, we would love for you to email lisa@organize365.com, and I will send that to Sarah, and we will take a look at that, because it's not just going to be me. Like, in order for this to be successful, it's going to be other people's organization solutions. It's going to be other people's research. It's going to be partnering company to company, person to person, expert to expert. And I am open for all of the collaboration, because I feel that no one person has the answer. Together, we are all better. And together, we are all, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. We are all going to feel more organized, more relieved, reduce our expectations on ourselves and our homemaking. That's what we want to bring to light. Sarah, anything you wanted to add?
Yes, I would like to add something.
Okay.
So, as a Donatopian once said, one raindrop raises the sea. I would like to put a feeler out for students as well. So if I have my PhD in social psychology, if there are other master's students out there or doctoral students that would like to conduct research in this area and you're looking for information, please reach out to lisa@organize365.com. Or if you are a company and you're interested on how this product may work within your company and want research on that, that would be fascinating to collaborate and to move forward in that direction.
Yeah, we're open for the possibilities. Like, I've gotten so much better in the recent years of holding a dream or a vision of a future reality in my mind without worrying about the details or how it's going to come to fruition. And every single time it happens faster than I thought it would, and in a completely different way than I thought it would. Like, I never in a million years thought that Sarah would partner with us in this research and this passion that I have. And I'm just so grateful for you, Sarah, and everyone else that's going to contact us in the future to, you know, help people at home you feel so alone and by yourself at home. And I don't want you to feel that way. We all feel that way. And so I want us to have a way to talk about that, come up with solutions, and all of us to get more time and more pink slash pockets.
Yeah, we need more pinks. Well, thank you very much, Lisa. I greatly appreciate you.
Thank you.